Kyiv comes under another attack.
The grieving husband of a woman killed during Russian missile strikes on Kyiv overnight into Thursday, saying that they had tried to get to their local bomb shelter during the attacks, but no one could open the door.
Plus, is it time for Ukraine to join NATO?
It's not for Moscow to have a veto against the NATO enlargement.
And later in the program, if Russian President Vladimir Putin goes to South Africa, can he be arrested? Today is Thursday, June 1st. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. A young girl, her mother, and another woman were killed during a Russian missile strike on Kyiv after the air raid shelter they rushed to had failed to open. This, according to witnesses, including a grieving husband. Meanwhile, Russia's mercenary boss, Yevgeny Prigozhin, is laying even more criticism on those he calls clowns in the defense ministry's war machine. Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda reports.
The grieving husband of a woman killed during Russian missile strikes on Kyiv overnight into Thursday is saying that they had tried to get to their local bomb shelter during the attacks, but no one could open the door. There were women and children trying to get in, he says, when debris from a missile fell around them. Authorities say several people were killed in the incident, including a young girl and her mother, the 18th such attack by Russia on the city since the start of May. Russia has increased its missile and drone attacks on Kyiv in recent weeks ahead of the expected counteroffensive from Ukrainian forces. In this attack, the Ukrainian military says Russia used 10 missiles and all of them were shot down. But the city's mayor, Vitaly Klitschko, says a fragment caused the deaths.
We have weeks long, every day, the Russians send their kamikaze drone and missiles to our hometown. And a lot of people killed, a lot of buildings destroyed. We have a big part of people who have an injury. And yes, of course, people very angry. It's not the war, it's genocide against Ukraine, against Ukrainian people from Russia.
Russia has accused Ukraine's forces of increasing their own shelling on border regions in recent weeks, including wounding 8 people Thursday. Meanwhile, as fighting continues in eastern Ukraine, Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of Russia's Wagner Group mercenary organization, says his fighters will finally leave the ruins of the city of Bakhmut on June 5th after handing control of it to Russian government troops. This video was taken during nighttime training drills. The pullout began May 25th and was originally slated for completion by June 1st. Prigozhin says the mercenaries will rest for about a month. He also continued his constant criticism of Russia's military brass, saying that his forces shouldn't have to operate alongside what he called clowns, who turn people into meat.
That's Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda. And as we've heard, Kyiv was again the target of Russian attacks on Wednesday night. The attacks killed a 9-year-old girl and her mother, along with another woman who were trying to get into a bomb shelter. But the door was closed. I'm joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv for the latest.
Yes, it was a tragic night for Kyiv. It was another missile attack on the capital. This time, we know about 7 ballistic missiles, which were used, and 3 cruise missiles. Unfortunately, debris damaged residential building and a hospital. And unfortunately, also debris killed 3 people in Kyiv, 2 women and 1 child. And this news comes just right on the day of the International Children's Day, which is today on June 1st.
I think what makes that particularly sad is that these people who were killed in Kyiv were trying to get into a bomb shelter when they were hit by falling debris. Do we know why the door was locked? Do we know any more about what was happening?
Correct. This is another part of the story. These people who were killed, they were queuing to get to the shelter. Unfortunately, the shelter was locked. When Mayor of Kyiv, Vitaly Klitschko, arrived to the site, he announced that it will be an investigation, that investigation has already started, and that people responsible would be put to justice immediately. For the moment, there is no news on that. In terms of why the shelter was locked. Some people say that it might be because the security guard was drunk or was asleep. So for the moment, we don't really know exactly the details, but we know for sure that it was locked. And unfortunately, these people, so we can imagine that if they stayed at home, if they would not go to the shelter, they might have been alive now.
Now, Kyiv wasn't the only target last night. Kharkiv was also shelled. Do we know what happened there?
Yes, unfortunately, the city of Kharkiv was shelled. It was a separate shelling, and again, it's happening more often and often with Kharkiv right now because, again, Kharkiv is located just 40 kilometers from the Russian border, and Russian forces have opportunity to shoot, to artillery shoot even Kharkiv from their territory. But for the moment, the mayor of Kharkiv confirmed that there are damages in the industrial area and that one woman was rescued from under the rubble, and no victims are reported at this time.
Now, while all this is happening, President Zelensky is in Moldova at an EU summit where he'll be talking about, amongst other things, more air defense for Ukraine. Can you give us an update?
Yes, actually, also this was not announced visit, as all of his visits, both internal and abroad. What we know is that President Zelensky, he had the air defense question is the main question that he discussed with the European allies and leaders. What we know that he named three particular steps how Europe can help additionally to Ukraine. First, he said, is of course additional air defense systems, and also President Zelensky mentioned that the whole world should put it very clear what Russia is doing in Ukraine, so it should be no doubt. And the third step is, of course, President Zelensky named what is Ukrainian membership in NATO. And of course, this is one of the most discussed topics right now, especially as everyone is waiting for the upcoming NATO summit in July. And as we're hearing from different sources, Ukrainian position and Ukrainian situation in terms of joining NATO or getting invitation to join NATO, even this would be more correctly to put it, is discussed in different contexts. And of course, we will keep an eye on that. And in Ukraine, everyone is expecting this NATO summit in July very, very much.
And we'll leave it there for today. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
While Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky was in Chisinau making the case for Ukrainian membership in NATO, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg was in Oslo on Thursday. He said that NATO's door is open for Ukraine to join the alliance and that Russia does not have a veto against NATO enlargement.
Over the last months, NATO allies and partners have provided unprecedented level of support to Ukraine, helping them to retake and liberate Ukrainian territory. We will also discuss Ukraine's membership aspirations, and all allies agree that the NATO door is open for new members. All allies also agree that Ukraine will become a member of the alliance. And all allies agree that it is for the NATO allies and Ukraine to decide when Ukraine becomes a member, is not for Moscow to have a veto against NATO enlargement.
When asked about missile strikes in Kyiv, Stoltenberg called the airstrikes on Ukrainian civilians a war crime. And separately, he reiterated that Turkey and all other NATO members have invited Sweden to become a full NATO member, and he noted the alliance is working to make that happen as early as possible. And on the subject of former Soviet republics looking towards Europe for their future, amid fresh strikes on Kyiv, another former republic, Georgia, is watching closely. In 2008, Georgia came under attack from Russian-backed separatists, losing its breakaway regions of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. Now, as Georgia's population looks firmly westward, some accuse its government of leaning towards Moscow, risking Georgian hopes to join the European Union. Lisa Bryant reports from the capital, Tbilisi.
Amid fresh strikes on Kyiv and as Ukraine readies its counteroffensive against Russia, another former Soviet republic is watching closely. In 2008, Georgia waged a brief war against Moscow and pro-Russian separatists, losing its breakaway region of South Ossetia and another, Abkhazia. Now, as Georgia's population looks firmly westward, some accuse its government of leaning towards Moscow, risking Georgian hopes to join the European Union. Lisa Bryant reports from the capital, Tbilisi, and near the border of South Ossetia. Here in north-central Georgia, Russia is never far away. Barriers cut through Kirvoleti village, separating South Ossetia from the rest of the country. European Union monitors help ensure stability along what's called the administrative boundary line. Plasmas is spokesman for the European Union monitoring mission in Georgia.
We are particularly at this spot here today because it's a very visual point to see how indeed the conflict for many people is not over.
It's certainly not over in Saravani settlement, a few dozen kilometers away. It houses thousands of people displaced by the South Ossetian conflict 15 years ago. Today, life seems almost normal. But some here believe what's happening in Ukraine, thousands of miles away, might determine Georgia's chances of retaking its own territory and going home. Nansha Kruli is an internally displaced person and the director of a local nonprofit.
If Ukraine will win, hope it will win, we will have more chance. If they will not, we will have no chance.
In the capital, Tbilisi, and elsewhere in the country, many Georgians are rooting for Ukraine and to join the European Union. In this former Soviet republic, the birthplace of hardline Soviet leader Joseph Stalin, there are strong feelings, too, about Russia, including the thousands of Russians who have arrived for business or political reasons since Moscow invaded Ukraine.
Russians who are here must go home. Must go home.
Critics say the ruling Georgian Dream Party does not reflect the country's pro-Western bent. Moscow's resumption of flights to Tbilisi in May, marking warming ties between the two countries, was met with protests here. There were massive demonstrations earlier this year against a so-called foreign agents bill for groups receiving funding from abroad. The government ultimately dropped the legislation, which critics denounced as again bringing Georgia closer to Russia. Irakli Pojkizde is vice president of the Georgian Institute for Strategic Studies.
Basically, the entire Georgian population for quite some time, I mean, the majority of it, has been supporting the pro-European future of Georgia, but also integration with NATO. And of course, the government these days has been going against that wave.
Georgian Dream Party lawmakers say they are committed to democracy and to Europe, but must walk a pragmatic line faced with their powerful Russian neighbor. For now, the party appears to have more popular support than the opposition. Two big events are coming up. The EU will reconsider Georgia's candidacy application after having recommended a set of reforms, and Georgia's 2024 elections. Both could determine where the country is heading in the months and years to come. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Tbilisi.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. In South Africa, a judge is expected to rule soon on a request for an order that would, in theory, compel the government to arrest Russian President Vladimir Putin if he visits the country. The International Criminal Court, the ICC, has issued an arrest warrant for Putin, accusing him of war crimes in Ukraine. The Russian leader has accepted an in-person invitation to attend the annual summit of the BRICS countries in Johannesburg and Cape Town in August. Darren Taylor reports.
South Africa signed the Rome Statute, which established the ICC in 2002. As such, it's obliged to arrest alleged war criminals and surrender them to the court. But the African National Congress government says it'll never arrest Putin, saying it would be a declaration of war on Russia. On Tuesday, opposition party the Democratic Alliance, the DA, applied to the Johannesburg High Court for a judgment to force the state to take Putin into custody should he arrive in August.
I mean, legally, I guess, but politically, I mean, I don't think that that's possible politically. I just have to be honest. I can't see that happening.
Professor Dire Tladi is a legal expert at the University of Pretoria and a fellow at the Institute of Comparative and International Law in Africa. He expects the DA's application to succeed because South Africa's ICC law is clear that it must execute the court's warrants. But Tladi doubts this will result in Putin's arrest. He adds, however, the diplomatic immunity that the government extended to Putin on Monday does not override any existing international arrest warrants.
Unless the government is able to challenge successfully the purported request for a declaratory order by the Democratic Alliance, then I guess, you know, as a matter of law, you can't hide behind immunity for not arresting a sitting head of state.
In 2015, the South African government ignored an ICC war crimes arrest warrant for Sudan's then president, Omar al-Bashir, allowing him to leave an African Union meeting in Johannesburg to fly back to Khartoum. Now Pretoria says it cannot be expected to violate its neutrality in the Ukraine war by arresting Putin. Professor of International Law at the University of Johannesburg, Henny Strydom, says this is a weak argument.
Neutrality is a totally separate issue. It's got nothing to do with the country's obligations in terms of a multilateral treaty. It cannot use the neutrality not to comply with its obligations.
He says the government appears to be rushing to amend its ICC laws so that sitting heads of state are exempt from arrest on South African soil, but this is unlikely to happen in time for the BRICS summit. Tladi expects the ANC administration to ignore both the ICC warrant and the court judgment. He says it'll then probably be found in contempt of court, with Putin safely back home, but with further damage to South Africa's international reputation. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Russian authorities' forced transfer and deportation of Ukrainian children has made headlines, and a meeting last week between Russia's Children's Rights Commissioner, Maria Lvova-Belova, wanted by the International Criminal Court for her alleged role in these transfers, and a top UN official on children and armed conflict stirred controversy. In March, the ICC issued an arrest warrant for Lvova-Belova along with President Putin. I'm joined by Ellie Blyer of Human Rights Watch.
The formal legal accusations brought about in March by the ICC talk about two things, and that's the forcible deportation of Ukrainian children and the forcible transfer of Ukrainian children. And those are two separate legal terms, and they mean two separate things. Deportation is when a child is brought from occupied territory in Ukraine over across the border and into the Russian Federation. The forcible transfer of Ukrainian children is when the child is taken from occupied territory into other occupied territory in Ukraine. And in many instances, that means Crimea.
So basically what's happening is as Russian forces moved into parts of Ukraine, they've been taking children away from their families and putting them with Russian families in other places, either in Russia or in other parts of Ukraine.
Right. And that's been happening primarily under three circumstances. The first is children in institutions being transferred to institutions in Russia or adopted into Russian families or institutions in other occupied territories. Children are being separated from their guardians or parents or families through the Russian authorities' abusive filtration process at the border, usually when civilians are trying to evacuate. And then the final kind of large category is children who are sent to recreation camps, mostly in occupied Crimea, but also in Russia. And then for whatever reason, their return from those recreation camps was delayed.
Now, just to be clear, this is a war crime.
Yes, this is a war crime.
And that's what the warrant for Putin is for, yes?
Yes. It is the war crime of unlawful deportation of children and unlawful transfer of children.
So let's talk about the chain of command. Even though Putin is named in this warrant, is he directly giving orders to do this? Is he responsible for it? Who is? How is it happening?
Yeah, so the arrest warrant says that Putin is responsible through the ICC statement about this arrest warrant lists two major things. So for having committed the acts directly, jointly, or with others, and for failing to exercise proper control over subordinates who may be committing these acts. That's the allegation against Putin.
Recently, Russian official named Maria Lvova-Belova had a meeting with the UN, and she's also cited by the ICC as having taken part in this. Can you tell us who she is and why was that meeting so controversial?
Right. So Lvova-Belova is the children's rights ombudsperson in Russia, and she, the ICC's warrant against her says that she alleges that she bears individual responsibility for having committed the acts directly or with others. And this meeting was controversial, largely because victims of these war crimes deserve to see Lvova-Belova behind bars in The Hague and not meeting with high-level UN officials. Senior UN officials like Gamba, the official that met with her, should avoid contact with persons that are subject to ICC warrants, and it's hard to imagine any circumstance that would justify such a meeting. Gamba could have met with any other official other than the official named in the arrest warrant.
So now that we understand what's happening, what's being done about it, is there an international effort or a Russian or Ukrainian effort to get the children back?
Yes, there is. Ukraine is in the process of developing many mechanisms for the return of deported children. The largest is they have a national information bureau set up to try to keep track of unaccompanied children or children who are transferred to Russia, register them, keep track of their whereabouts, and keep track of the amount of children who are returned. They also have mechanisms by which you can contact this information bureau or provide information if you are contacted by any relatives or anybody who might know about the whereabouts of a child. There are also many Ukrainian NGOs that are helping to return forcibly transferred children. The Network for Children's Rights and SOS Children's Towns Ukraine brought home 80 children, and SOS Ukraine Children's Villages Ukraine also gives 32,000 hryvnia financial aid for each child. There are many, many local NGOs and civil societies that are trying to return children as quickly as possible. And there are also joint international efforts between the EU, the UN, and the US all working with Ukraine to try to bring back these children.
It's clearly one of the biggest humanitarian stories of the war and one that I'm sure we haven't heard the last of yet. Ellie Blyer is an associate for Europe and Central Asia with Human Rights Watch. Ms. Blyer, thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for your analysis.
Thank you so much for speaking with me.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage of Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.